This is Get a Real Job, the podcast devoted to people who choose risk over safe bets, who pursue their passion against all odds and are doing what they want, how they want, despite people and sometimes the voices in their own heads telling them they're nuts.
When the field that I wanted to work in didn't exist, I created it.
The only thing you have to decide is how hard do you want to work.
I really never went into the design of the restaurant of not succeeding. One way or another, I was going to succeed.
I'm your host, Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Thanks for listening. And now, get a real job. Today's guest is a super funny guy who you know from countless appearances on late night TV like Conan and Jimmy Fallon, and movies like Night School and The Way Back, which wasn't a comedy, but was quite good. Did you also know that he is the co-founder of the All Things Comedy Network, which is the number one comedy network in the podcast universe? That wasn't a rhetorical question. Answer me, Patrick.
I did not know that.
Oh, well, now you do. He's extremely funny. And from his stand-up, I've learned he's extremely allergic to most things. So spring must be a real treat. Please welcome Al Madrigal.
Hey, how are you? Nice to see you, Dan.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again. I feel, yes, we have met. Probably stood next to each other in a green room at some point.
I may have been outside your window at some point. Yeah. There's many ways that we could have...
Light stalking.
Yeah, you've been on a lot of late night. I used to work on a late night TV show hosted by Mr. Jimmy Kimmel. So perhaps we crossed paths. Maybe I nervously showed you where to stand before the cameras popped on or something.
That's right. That was actually one of my very first television experiences was Kimmel when they had a guest host. And the guest host was Deion Sanders.
Nice.
And it was the Easter show because I was traumatized by this. So I'll never forget. The Deion spanked a child who cried on air.
Oh.
And then I got up. And I remember Daniel Kellison, who was the EP at the time, looked at me and he was joking, but he says, 4.5 minutes, go 1 second over and we're going to cut your mic. My first TV appearance. Then I go and I stand. I was penned in. There was a small fence and they put me, I was doing stand up in an area where baby chicks and rabbits were darting around at my feet as I was doing stand up for the very first time on network television. So recapping, Deion spanked a boy that, who cried. The audience was just in shock.
Wow.
And then, again, I was terrified about my time and there were animals every once in a while I was in a bit and a rabbit would just fly by my feet. not ideal.
That's amazing. You know, at Entrepreneur, we talk all the time about get outside of your comfort zone. So I think you did that and you get an A+ for that.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I was sort of built for this podcast because when I told and we can go back to, you know, the parents' family business, but when I told my father that I was going to be performing as a stand-up comedian, I got yelled at. So I was yelled at a couple different times and I was driving to Sacramento because I was, and I remember getting the phone call. He goes, "Where are you right now?" And I said, "Well, I'm driving to Sacramento." And he said, "Why?" And I go, "Well, I'm performing at the Sacramento Punchline." And he goes, "With who?" And I go, "This guy, Louis C.K. He goes, "Who the hell is Louis C.K.? I don't ever heard of him." Which, well, you have to be like, for my father to know who you are as a celebrity, like there's the levels of fame. And like, I would just imagine he was constantly going, "Who the hell is that?" And he goes, "How much are they paying you?" I go, $25. And he goes, $25, you idiot. He goes, you know how much the gas costs to drive up to Sacramento? You're not making any money. Like, and just why are you doing this? I don't understand why you're doing this.
Oh my God.
And then even to the point where things started to take off, he couldn't understand because it hadn't equated to any money yet. Because I was this guy who was supposed to take over his parents' family business. So my mother has this incredible success story. This is a rags to riches, just it built into me. And that's probably where my sort of that entrepreneurial spirit comes from, because I can tell you all the businesses that I tried to start about along the way. You'll eventually be able to ask a question, Dan.
What was the family business?
So yeah, the family business was we were a professional employment organization, so a PEO. So we employed people to work at other people's businesses. So I would employ the CEO down to, you know, the file clerk and a part-time person. So we'd employ 100% of the people at your company. So you technically didn't have any employees on paper, and you got to take advantage of our workers' comp rates, our buying power when it came to insurances. I used to do sales for that company, so that's why. Wow. I can spout this all. And so I worked there from the age of 19 to 32. But wow. Really what we did is that we took over all of your headaches. So I was in charge and was very good at it, in charge of progressive discipline. And so we had at one point in our height had about 4,500 employees leased out all over the San Francisco
Bay Area. Holy cow.
So I was just constantly putting out fires. So would write people up. You know, someone's cheating on their time card, I'd have to talk to them, you know, and
wow.
Fist fight, I'd have to talk to them, you know, just, and when you saw Up in the Air with George Clooney, he had it easy because he was terminating white collar employees. I was terminating people who really needed their jobs and had screwed up. Because I was warning everyone, I was doing everything perfectly. Like I fired somebody when they got a third warning, and I was just miserable doing it. I just hated it. So, and always wanted to be a stand-up comic, but just back to just my father real quick. And my mother just didn't understand, like I was being fed this great job, you know, and again, could have been there making a great living, could have stayed up a local comedian if I wanted up in San Francisco. And they were very upset that their eldest son, I was the retirement plan, to my mother real quick, because I sort of owe her a lot. $6 an hour secretary, worked her way up to account manager, worked her way up to senior account manager, vice president, and then bought the company from the owner.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, quadrupled it in size. And that's where, you know, I saw her do this amazing thing. And with, again, no college education, was cleaning houses at one point, you know, when I was really little, and my dad was a Teamster. So this really was our way out. And I turned my nose up at that. They felt like they were trying to buy me a house in San Francisco to keep me around. Like they just really wanted me to stay.
So, you know, what's fascinating about all that is that, you know, when I've talked to other comedians or actors sometimes, you know, a lot of them were like, you know, I was a waiter or I was just doing odd jobs or whatever. It wasn't like there wasn't a lot to lose by them trying to pursue this thing that they dreamed about. But you had something really solid there. Like you had a lot to lose by walking away from, you know, what sounds like a really solid job that was paying you well, the family business. So like, was there a moment that you remember where you're just like, I can't do this. I've got to try this other thing.
I knew I was turning 30. So I started doing stand-up when I was 28 years old. And went to Montreal in 2002. So about 4 years. If you don't, Montreal is this like Just for Laughs comedy festival.
Oh, yeah. That's yeah.
Like an NBA draft for young comedians, you know. So I remember like thinking if I didn't do stand-up before I was 30, because I always wanted to, I was the salutatorian at my high school class, you know, the class clown, but never got in trouble, just always subtly funny. And yeah. So that's why I think that was another problem that my dad had. He's like, you're not funny. Like, you're doing this. But I was always, it was a very subtle, understated, funny, you know, whispering to my friends, not getting
in trouble. Yeah.
And grew up on a block with some other comedians. There was a comic that went to my high school. I think it's important for people to know that this is a job. And to my dad, or to, that's why you don't see a lot of Latinos in the entertainment industry, because just people are unaware that these jobs exist.
Yeah.
So my dad, like, is thinking, okay, business person, lawyer, doctor, that I get.
Yeah.
Like, same thing with Asian parents, you know, Indian parents. It just, yeah, you want those jobs you can brag to your friends about.
Right. Oh my God. Well, we've been delighted by the things that you've done. So I'm glad you bucked the trend there, Al. We're glad you went for it.
And, you know, like, you know, there was certainly a time in like 2005 where I was, what have I done? You know, it's just,
yeah.
You know, went down, I showed up in LA with a 1-year-old and my wife, and we right away sort of got, disappointment handed to us immediately, sort of that Hollywood, rejection that you have to develop a thick skin. And I thought I had it made. I got cast in a TV show right away. So I didn't just jump out to no money. I sort of strategically sort of planned my exit. And, you know, I shot a TV pilot and went right back to work the next day. So I just, once we got our series picked up, then I was able to leave. And luckily I've been sort of consistently working ever since, but it was shaky there for a little bit. Yeah.
I bet. Cause so Patrick and I, before the pandemic, destroyed everything, we were trying our hands at, stand up, doing some open mics. And that is not an easy thing to do.
Not at all.
Day out. It is horrible.
Especially like later in life, it's trickier to start because you're just at some point you're like, why am I subjecting myself?
Yes, exactly.
Totally. Exactly.
It was not fun. And then you just felt bad forever until you got, it was like striking out or something. Then you like had to wait till the next time up. And
well, also I think like what you're saying with the life experience, it's like, you know, you're there and we actually stayed to watch everyone, even if we went at the beginning of the set, because it seems like, oh, that's like the right thing to do. But maybe if you're younger, you're just like, oh, F that. Like, you just want to like leave right away. You're just right. Yourself. It's like, first, you get older, you feel bad.
Yeah, at first you're watching, you know, to see who everybody is and get, you know, a feel for it. And then you have other spots lined up, so you just sort of take off. I remember being 3 weeks into stand-up, 3 weeks in, and being at an open mic and looking at the new friend that I just made in stand-up and going, why are we doing this? I don't see any, because again, now you have this guy with this business background who says, where do we want to be? I'm talking to a group of other stand-up comics who know nothing.
Yeah.
And I go, we want to be in comedy clubs, right? And everybody agreed, yes. So I go, why are we not hanging out there? I became this de facto sort of leader in San Francisco right away. Just was like, what everyone's doing doesn't make sense. I'm not performing for those two homeless people ever again. And that's what it was. Like we used to go, even the good shows that were booked, I'd been threatened at, like, remember being, we'd drive over to Oakland and Jack London Square. I have this bit in my act, just a story in my act, because it was very true. It's like, I was performing for people that would potentially like had guns on them for sure. Like there's
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. just to get in a mic on a microphone. So
right, right. And
I'd rather sit in the back of the comedy club and watch Damon Wayans, you know, do his headlining set than risk my life, you know, in Hayward.
Smart move.
More coming up from our guests, but first, a word from our sponsor. We all want to know that we have enough to get to where we want to go. For instance, you either have enough energy to run a marathon or you're on the side of the road wheezing. How about your startup? Does it have enough cloud computing power to win and handle the really big customers? You might think stable, enterprise-ready cloud infrastructure like Oracle is out of reach for your new company, but Oracle for Startups was made just for you. Oracle wants to help you land those big customers, so they're offering preferred pricing on Enterprise Cloud for Startups, free cloud credits, and 70% off their cloud services. And you'll get close with other founders who have ideas like yours, so you can pick partners and build the next big thing. Oracle for Startups doesn't want you wheezing on the side of the road. They want you to have enough power to scale and land your dream customer. Visit oracle.com/go-to/real-job. That's oracle.com/go-to/real-job.
And our next sponsor. Look, 2020 has proven to be the year of many things. But if you own a small business, this could also be the year you switch to better payroll. Gusto wasn't just built for small businesses, it was built for the people behind them. Their online payroll is so easy to use. Gusto can automatically calculate paychecks and file all your payroll taxes, which means you have more time to run your business. Plus, Gusto does way more than payroll. Gusto helps with time tracking, health insurance, 401ks, onboarding, commuter benefits, offer letters, access to HR experts. You get the idea. It's super easy to set up and get started, and if you're moving from another provider, they can transfer all your data for you. It's no surprise 94% of customers are likely to recommend Gusto, and here's the best part. Because you're a listener, you get 3 months totally free. Totally free for 3 months. That's awesome. All you have to do is go to gusto.com/garj. Again, that's gusto.com/garj. I'm telling you, you're gonna love Gusto. Get started today.
And we're back.
So you, as we, you know, said in the intro there, you and another quite famous comedian, Bill Burr, have this pretty awesome network set up, which is like kind of extra awesome because it's not exactly what you'd think of, like, oh, it's a comedy network, but it's more than that. Can you explain how how it came together and what it's become? Because it's gone crazy.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, business is just taking advantage of opportunities that present themselves to you. And, you know, we're always going to, and that's exactly what happened here, is that the two of us are ranting to each other in the Comedy Store parking lot around when he showed up in LA, and we became fast friends. And then basically thinking that business people are going to stick their hands into podcasting. And that's exactly what's happened. If I take a look at a map, and I think this map has been created like by PodTrack or something, where it's just like, these are all the players in podcasting. It's a ridiculous amount of corporations. But in 2010, when we had these podcasts, I had Minivan Men with Maz Jobrani and Chris Spencer. He had his Monday morning podcast that was newish. And we're realizing that people are going to stick their hands into this, try to offer us, you know, a piece of what we're now making 100% of the money. And, or, you know, you have a salesperson in there and it's an 80-20 split. So other people are going to be sticking their hands into this. Let's control the distribution. And then I knew that digital platforms were going, I wish I had invested more money in Netflix, but I just knew that eventually that we were going to be able to have our own channel. We're a production company. I just knew all the things that we'd be able to spin off at the, of this as we got bigger. So those things have really happened. We're that idea in the parking lot became a real company in 2012. We started with 10 podcasts. We have closer to 60. We really are a service provider for a lot of comics, but we offer a fair deal because we're the ones offering it. These are our friends. We're trading on these relationships. But right now, 2021, we are a production company that had just had the Patrice O'Neill documentary come out. We have,
which was great. I enjoyed that very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Mike Bonfiglio and Bill and, you know, a group of people got that done. Like I said, I have house painters at my house. So I have a Chihuahua that thinks he's a lion. And so as they all do.
Anyway, that's okay.
Henry in the background, folks. You know, we've become a production company that has a ton of stuff going on right now. We do branded content. So just podcast network, advertising agency, really, that just wrapped something for Planet Fitness. We have done work for Zillow and for Osio Bags and Callaway. And so that's been exciting because all comedians are great. Have a, you know, an inner Don Draper and
right.
Yeah. Also, yeah, you know, I spoke to Tom Papa once about this, and he was just saying how, like, when comedians are starting out, it's like you have to take care of all your own stuff, right? You don't have an agent when you're starting off. You don't have a manager. It's like, so it's kind of part of the, like, stand-up process is that you need to, like, take care of all the stuff yourself. So this, it makes sense that, you know, you and Bill would start something like this.
Yeah, we just wanted to make sure that everyone got a fair shake, and there was transparency. Transparency in Hollywood is tricky because you get these budgets, and let's say we are making a TV show, which, you know, we've done a bunch at this point. You know, you're given this huge sum of money, and then you've got to divide that up. And there's a lot of production companies that hide the money and are not you know, the most forthcoming when it comes to their expenses. And so we just wanted to make sure that all of our friends got taken care of. And it's grown beyond that to the point where we have agents and managers in Hollywood presenting a ridiculous amount of opportunities because sort of word got out that we're doing a great job. If you look at Ronnie Chang's special on Netflix, which Asian Comedian Destroys America, I just really, in the, you know, partially due to Ronnie's incredible ability as a stand-up comic, but we sort of delivered that on short notice for little money, and it looks as good as anything you've ever seen because all the money went into it. I didn't take a dime, you know, and so it's ATC makes its standard 10%, which is not a lot.
Yeah.
But we're not stealing from it on top of that.
That's awesome. And, you know, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. One thing that I think is so cool is that, again, you know, when I've talked to some people who they kind of like stumble into something and then it like grows bigger than they ever would have dreamed. And it sort of becomes this other thing. But I think it's kind of amazing that you and Bill are in the parking lot. And as you described it, it sounds like you knew exactly what it could become. And you had a goal of having it become that thing, not just, yeah, we'll start something and see what happens.
Yeah, it's I had a very wealthy entrepreneur give me some advice, and which was be great at what you're doing now. So we wanted to be really good at distributing audio, and then you can start hanging other things off of it. He used the Yahoo analogy. He goes, "Don't be Yahoo right away, trying to do everything." He goes, "Just be great at distributing audio." And then once we had that under our belt, and really, you know, organizing comedians is difficult. Everyone has been independent contractors to this point and just selfishly sort of motivated. And it's hard to imagine, okay, we reserved a chunk of this company for the comedians that participate in it. So when you're an active member of All Things Comedy, you're paying commissions back into a company that you own part of. Mm. So though I don't want to get wealthy off of the backs of my friends and sort of coworkers. I want to make sure that everyone gets to have that Trading Places, you know, champagne moment at some point when we hopefully, you know, and that's another part of the plan is like, we want this thing to be large. So I do need some sort of strategic partner at some point, which we're sort of in the process of looking for now.
So being a comedian is hard work. It's hard to put yourself up there. It's hard to, you know, get through this sort of start of it all. But then I wonder, as you start to, you know, you find success, you start to get roles in things, you know, things are getting bigger and bigger, which is awesome. You know, part of being a comedian is taking risks with the material, with the things you're saying. Now my dog's barking. So I wonder, like, as you get more successful, does it make you more guarded about, you know, what am I going to say on stage? Do I risk saying this thing and having people freak out and wanting to cancel me? Or are you get past that? How do you deal with that?
I've never cared. I'm a little prudish. I try not to talk about sex stuff just because I knew I always came into this with kids and I was like, I know their friends are going to be looking this up on YouTube or teacher, you know, so I tried not to say anything too outrageous. And I think early on I lost sight of that. So, I don't know. I just, again, because I'm a dork, I probably didn't, I don't say anything too insane. Everything I say is like, and I, for the most part, I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
Telling you exactly what happened too. It's like, and sometimes you know, we're getting in trouble when a character says something and, you know, if somebody says something awful to me and I repeat that, am I the one saying it?
Right.
Delivering the information. I don't know, man, I sort of stopped doing stand-up, because well before COVID, just because I didn't have time, I wanted to see my kids grow up. And then I had so much other stuff going on. I write quite a bit and then I'd act. And so I just wanted to spend as much time at home. So luckily I have sort of avoided any trouble, with, potential of getting canceled. And there's, at some point we're taking over our careers so much that there's not too much anyone can take away also.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's true. You know, we're recording this will come out, in a couple of weeks from now, but we're recording this after the Grammys, the day after the Grammys. And, Bill said some things that were hilarious, but of course people get rankled and they freak out and, on social media, but he doesn't seem to care about that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just Bill being Bill. I mean, if he's making jokes, he's the one of the kindest people that I've ever met, and just morally, he's just couldn't be a better business partner. I've seen him, you know, with his, you know, I'm just not going to comment on him, but it's just, he's an awesome person. So, I mean, if you know, jokes are jokes, and, you know, there's nothing to apologize for.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And also I just feel like, you know, as you said, they're jokes, you know, you're not a politician telling people what to think and what you believe. It's you're telling funny stories and telling crazy things, and that the point is for people to laugh at these things, not to.
Like, yeah. And again, I've seen him with every single person that you could possibly ever, you know, interact with people. And he's just he's delightful. He's yeah. So I don't know. It's a joke is a joke.
So what's your, you know, going back to your kind of origin story, you know, for other people that are, you know, a lot of people that read Entrepreneur or come to our site or listen to podcasts, you know, they probably, a lot of them have a job. They wish they could do, you know, turn their side hustle or whatever into something. There's a lot of roadblocks. Was there any kind of, you know, mantra in your head, or did you give yourself a timeline or anything when you kind of made that decision to just split with the safe route and just try this thing, even though your dad was saying, what are you, insane?
I knew I was, you know, in too deep at one point. First of all, I mean, the War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, I was carrying around in my back pocket. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with that book or do no. the work. Great book. If yeah, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with, if you're not, you want to buy it as soon as possible, because that really talks about the difference between being an amateur and a pro and when to make that leap. And so I got turned on to that in the beginning, and really I was committed to, once I got, again, that acting opportunity that sort of paid me to be in LA and transition properly, we made the choice to just be a pro, you know, and when I came to Los Angeles, and there was no turning back for me. And then, and there were very difficult times. We were living in a apartment in LA that had mold everywhere, and our son was sick, and, you know, it was stressful, and just knew I was so confident that I could, work and make a living as an actor and a comedian.
That's great.
Yeah, it's just it's always going to be tricky. I think you just have to. It's like playing double dutch. You know, the jump roping thing. You sort of got to
choose
when to jump in and right. go for it. And what I would tell everybody is just to dream big. Like, don't compromise. You know, being a comedy writer is too hard. Whatever the company is, like. You know, and that's what Stephen Pressfield says in the beginning of this book. It's like, if it doesn't matter, this applies to you starting a plumbing supply business. It's just go for it and sort of jump in. But your side hustle has to pay rent and whatever, you know, like whatever you're doing to support yourself, whether it's being a waiter or whatever it is, and but just make sure you keep that dream alive and don't compromise. I've had a bunch of little tiny companies up until this point. Like, I've always, I think, again, bringing it back to my mom, but inspired by what she did, and always knew that I wanted to be my own boss.
That's great. And, you know, I love that advice too, because it's not just like this head in the clouds, like, just forget all your worries and just go for it. It's like, yes, just go for it, but you have to pay your bills. So have a way to do that too. So I think that's really practical advice. And so, since you are a guy who dreams big and then, you know, finds a way to make those dreams happen, you know, what's the next big dream for Al and for the network?
Well, we're sort of making it happen right now, because, you know, we want to have shows on the air. We want to show everyone how great we are at producing. I want the network is going to continue to grow. We're doing a great job on the advertising side. We have an amazing team in place at this point. So we have our president, Mike Bertolina, who's just comes from Ben, the Branded Entertainment Network, and is bringing a bunch of branded work in. So we just want to continue to grow. At this point, we have about 10 employees. And, you know, I'd like to expand ATC to grow to our full potential, which is, you know, thriving production company with 5 TV shows on the air at least, and, you know, have our network rise through the ranks. Right now we're ranked, I think, 12th globally amongst all other podcast networks. And so I'd like to crack that top 10 and snuggle up next to ESPN around the 8th spot. And, and then continue to develop IP. We're in, you know, all comedians are prolific, man. Like, we have, take a guy like Tom Papa, who is a host, he's an actor, he's a great comedian, he's an author, he's a screenwriter, you know, like, you just, we have so much you know, product that we can generate. Yeah. And so it's just providing an outlet for comedians. The big pie in the sky dream for me is to provide, and this marries the two, my business background with comedy, is I'd love to find a way to get health insurance for comedians and potentially not even unionize, but bring them under an umbrella organization where they can qualify for affordable health insurance is another extension of this. And that's just making sure that, again, people have coverage. It also comes from like a tragedy early on in stand-up. Right when I moved down to LA, my best friend, who was the guy, said, "Why are we doing open mics too?" Passed away because he didn't have health insurance. And so I was thinking, this is crazy. Like comics are just out there and not, you know, covered. There's people doing great things. Jamie Masada from the Laugh Factory is providing, you know, mental health resources for a lot of the comedians, but it'd be great eventually to get everybody health insurance. So that's the big
dream. Yeah. Well, that's a pretty great great goal. Well, Al, I want to thank you for your time and really, really fascinating hearing how all this, you know, started and amazing where you've taken it. So, you know, you're building this big thing. So what if one day your daughter says, "You know what? I don't want to do this. I want to go fire people."
I tell my kids, I go, "Try hard, be nice. I don't care what you do." As long as there's effort in there mixed with kindness, I think we're good. So she can do whatever the heck she wants. I don't see why anybody would want to work in an office. It makes, well, you could be working in, I'm sitting in a craft room right now that looks like I'm in a bunker. But why would you work in an office when you could be sitting in this beautiful bunker?
That's great. Man. Well, so great talking to you. And I hope we talk again as things progress. And I can't wait to see what you guys have next.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Dan.
That's our episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Get a Real Job comes out every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you harvest your favorite podcasts. Leave us a review, give us a share, and make it big, people. Go to entrepreneur.com for new episodes of this and to listen to our other great podcasts. Thanks.